sudden, there was just this awareness. You could see it in his eyes. And he went over to her and he took her two hands and he smiled at her. And I could see the tears in her eyes that the music therapy in this scenario had made such an seemingly insignificant moment where they weren't able to connect with each other, that by providing the music, that they were able to create a meaningful connection. And for that lady who had travelled 2 hours to see her brother, and even if it was just for 2 minutes that they had that lovely connection, that's the power of music therapy. It offers people hope.
We are music therapists and we fall under the umbrella of creative arts therapies. In Ireland, we'd be governed by IACAT, and under the umbrella of IACAT, we have dance movement, drama, art therapy, music therapy and expressive art, all trained to level 9 qualification. So all of our training and a lot of it would have crossover with, let's say, psychotherapy, for instance, because the modality, be it music, art, dance, that's what we use as our term of expression. Talk therapy isn't, let's say, comfortable or suitable for everybody. So what this does is it offers everybody a mode of expression to express what might be going on. It might be to work on a trauma. It might be grief. It could be any number of things. And also, there are quite a number of people in all societies who are nonverbal. They don't have the ability to avail of traditional talk therapies. So what the creative arts therapies provide is a voice for all through all of those different modalities.
The two voices you heard there were of Lisa Kelly and Fabian Joyce, co-founders of Anna Music Therapy based in Tuam. But before we delve much further into what creative arts therapies are, we will explore the impact they can have. We'll do that by listening to some interviews carried out by art therapist Dr. Amy O'Neill as part of her PhD research examining art therapy as a support for children living with chronic illness. This interview audio has been shared with us thanks to IACAT, the Irish Association of Creative Arts Therapists, which we'll learn more about later. Dr. O'Neill asked several children how being part of an art therapy group has helped them.
Sometimes I have really bad days in school and it's not great, so it just calms me down. So I have everything off my shoulders and I can just relax.
Can you say a little bit more about those bad days or how
well,
it kind of helped?
When I forget to bolus or check my blood, mm-hmm. or I forget to do stuff that I have to do,
yeah.
and then my bloods go high and I feel sick all day and I can't concentrate during school.
So the group you feel has helped you in some way manage on those kind of things, yeah. a little bit better. And how has making art in the group helped you? Do you feel that's helped you and how?
Well, it's kind of, again, it's getting everything off my shoulders and just putting it on a page or making it in play so I can like see it in person.
So releasing it all out yeah. there and putting it all out there. Yeah. So as someone who's had art therapy in a group like this, what would you say to another young person with a chronic illness who's seeking joining a group like this?
Well, it's really fun and it helps you a lot with everything.
When I did I talked about feeling sad and I was very scared that someone was going to be like, why is she talking about that? Is she always sad like that?
So you were worried people might judge you for experiencing those feelings?
Yeah.
But did you realise after the group that everybody has those feelings and has experienced those feelings at some
yeah.
point around their chronic illness? So what was it like to know that you're not the only one carrying these big feelings?
I felt more... I think I just felt more safe or comfortable.
The group has definitely helped me because it made me realise that I'm not the only one in the world with, like, an chronic illness and... it also taught me that I can say what I want, as in express my feelings. And like my mum said that she's noticed I don't make a fuss when I have to do my nebulizers.
Brilliant. So it's helped yeah. you cope and manage those feelings around having to mind and do your medicines and things like that.
Exactly.
Has the art making in the group helped you and how?
Yes, it definitely has. I can't really describe how, but I know it definitely has.
Perfect.
perfect.
And if you met someone else, another young person with a chronic illness who's thinking of joining a group like this, what would you say to them?
I'm actually thinking of someone in my head, so I'll just picture them and saying it to them.
Yeah.
So there's this group that I went to, and it really helped. And if you really like doing art, then you will also really like this. It helps you kind of express your feelings and how you feel when I chronic illness. It teaches you how to calm down when you're angry. And you meet new people with problem, maybe with the same I chronic illness or with something else, and you learn about them as well.
Now that we understand some of the benefits of creative arts therapies, let's explore the wider picture of what they are, the different modalities, and in what settings they're used. We will focus more on art therapy first by hearing from Kate O'Sullivan from Galway Creative Arts Therapy and Red Door Studio in Galway City. Kate works with a wide range of people through her private practice, whether that is with families and their children, or through groups such as Cope Galway, Simon Community, and Rehab Care. Kate first paints us a picture of what art therapy is.
What I usually say is that I'm providing safe, confidential, non-judgmental space for people to express creatively, so in other means than words, because words are sometimes not enough. And through this interaction with art materials and with one another, people can gain new insights about themselves and new awareness, self-awareness, and then through that also, you know, develop their coping skills. And what makes art therapy different to other forms of therapy or psychotherapy is that there's three-point relationship. So it's relationship between a client, therapist, and then there is another entity, which is art or creation. And this works in a way that sometimes where people are not comfortable talking about themselves, especially children, or where they feel a little bit ashamed, there is something else that I can actually speak. There's other way of communication. So they can express and use metaphors and symbols because that may feel safer.
Keeping with art therapy, we now explore the modality in a different setting by hearing from Kathy Highland, an art therapist working within the Galway and Mayo Hospice in the city. As part of a long-standing provision of care by the hospice, Kathy works with patients and their families throughout the inpatient unit and daycare service. I caught up with Kathy in her art therapy room, an open space with a garden view and a glass ceiling. Kathy talked me through art therapy, along with her experience and training to becoming an art therapist. She also spoke about how she finds there is a general lack of understanding amongst the public in relation to what art therapy is and how it's used.
Training has been around here in Ireland for almost 30 years. Since I graduated in 2012, I've worked in various different settings, acute psychiatric, addiction, brain injury. I spent some time in Cape Town, South Africa. Shortly after qualifying, five of us worked in the townships and in the Red Cross Children's Hospital out there.
Okay, so it's clear it's been around a long time, but people maybe aren't so familiar with it, which may bring about misconceptions. What would you say are the most common misconceptions that people may have?
The biggest misconception really is that some level of skill or experience with art making is necessary to engage. It's about making meaningful art rather than beautiful art. It can be daunting at first, and it requires trust and often some level of reassurance that the art making doesn't have to look a certain way. It provides an alternative language to express and process feelings and emotions. So really, its essence is about getting something from the inside out and the support gained from this process. People often surprise themselves at how much they get from it, and how it can really help you gain insight into feelings and life experiences. And it's particularly useful for those that aren't open to traditional talk therapy.
Right, and you spoke about the process and how someone going to an art therapist doesn't need to have any art skills, because it's not about judging the art, it's more than that.
It is, really, yeah. Artwork made is not analysed, but we are sensitive to the subtleties of making and reviewing art. Insights and discoveries are then explored together at a pace led by the patient or the individual. We often work with the language of symbols and metaphors and the non-verbal through art and through the image, and how each individual uses this in their own unique way.
Okay, so you're working within the Galway Hospice here as an art therapist, and you meet different people with varying experiences, I can imagine. Can you talk me through, I suppose, the specifics of working in a palliative care setting such as the Galway Hospice?
Yeah, working as an art therapist in a palliative care setting, it's a very unique and special way of working. The patient's emotional and psychological well-being is central to these sessions. Quite often, what is being experienced can be too difficult to express in words alone. So the art therapy process can lead into conversations about current feelings and emotions at a pace that's comfortable to the patient. And it encourages expression in a safe and gentle way. Patients often welcome the opportunity to make artwork as part of their legacy for loved ones, and sessions can be availed of together as a family as well. So quite often our patients are trying to come to terms with big changes and challenges in their lives and in their families' lives. The Galway Hospice have provided support through art therapy for quite a number of years now, and it's a valuable part of the overall care provided here.
And now we return to music therapists with Anna Music Therapy, Lisa and Fabian, who have gone down a slightly different path through their social enterprise work in community settings. Lisa explains.
So we wanted to offer a different approach. So really a proactive approach to addressing some of the societal issues. So we did some research and we decided to set up as a social enterprise. So we offer a number of different services. So we offer private referrals. We also offer contractual services to different organisations. So whether that be the HSE, for example. And we also provide a number of community-based initiatives in the local Galway area as well. So that can range from parent and baby music therapy groups to a music therapy group that supports family caregivers, and also groups for older adults as well who might be experiencing social isolation. I suppose it's important to note that every music therapy session will be different. So we tailor our sessions to the individual needs of our clients. So for example, if we're working with people with dementia, we're trying to encourage reminiscence, promote social interaction, and just improve overall quality of life. So we're really tapping into the familiar songs in that person's life. And so we liaise a lot, I suppose, with the multidisciplinary team within the setting that we're working, but also the family members of the person that we're working with. Because not only are we working with the client, but sometimes we are trying to promote that meaningful connection for the family member and their loved one with dementia, for example. So within a music therapy session, we use many types of music methods. So that might include instrument play, improvisation, songwriting, song singing, song discussion, maybe perhaps some music or movement to music or music assisted relaxation. So again, it really depends on the needs of the client. So if we might be working with a child with autism, some of the goals we might be working on might be to encourage social interaction, to promote communication, to provide some sensory regulation. So all of the music activities that we do within a music therapy session are to address those goals.
Okay, great. And then I suppose as well, it's clear that there is things that you can do through music therapy that can't be done through talk therapy. What kind of impact does it have? If that's something that you can kind of talk through just in general, what are the benefits of music therapy?
There's a tagline, and it's used among our profession, is where words fail, music speaks. Oftentimes it can be very uncomfortable for people to speak, but also there are non-verbal people among our societies and communities. They don't have the ability to speak. What is their modus operandi to express? So music offers that. So we cater for a very broad range of people in society who might slip between the cracks, as it were, and we're trying to pick up the shortfall there. and offer everybody an equal opportunity.
As Lisa mentioned, a technique she often uses with clients is songwriting. Through her work with dementia care patients, Lisa united the group to compose a song together, and the group then recorded the piece of music and performed it live at the Royal Irish Academy of Music and Dance. The song captures their experience of their music therapy sessions.
Is a moment in time and a lifetime of memories. It helps me remember thoughts forgotten, reflections of what used to be. We developed a negative of black and white, turning our life into color. Filled with joy and happiness, my life.
While talk therapy is widely known and utilised today, creative arts therapies have their own unique benefits, but they're somewhat going under the radar here in Ireland. This is a fight that the Irish Association of Creative Arts Therapists, or IACAT, have been carrying for quite some time. Fabian Joyce is vice chair of the IACAT, and we now return to him to help explain the body, its purpose and its vision.
It's to monitor professional standards of members, but also training institutes. So art therapy, for instance, trained in MTU, music therapy at the University of Limerick. They're the only institutions in Ireland that provide level 9 qualifications. So we're highly qualified, highly skilled professionals, and our work is underpinned by empirical evidence-based research. IACAT currently growing our database of that research to inform all of our practitioners. So we can go back to that database at all times, talk among our peers. Those numbers from the early 90s have grown now to almost 500 members, and it is growing. Interest is growing, but crucially, awareness and advocacy is growing also. And thanks to brilliant work like yourself, journalism and documentary like this will be a huge piece in that as well. So we do strive on a national level to be the voice for all creative arts therapies.
Okay, and obviously it's a growing area. There's a lot of research gone behind it. It's evidence-based and you do a lot of training. So what is the recognition like in terms of department, government, in terms of the public? How is that and how satisfied or dissatisfied are you with that at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose we've done a lot of work over the last number of decades. It's not new. Recently, it seems to have a lot of traction, which is great, but we're not new. None of these therapies are new. As I mentioned, we are around since the 80s in Ireland. So it's been around for decades. And within this country, we are still striving for statutory recognition. So we are currently 20 years on that journey. Internationally, so our closest neighbours in the UK, art therapy and music therapy would have statutory recognition. So they are recognised posts among the what are called the allied health professions, in that you have speech and language, you have occupational therapy, physiotherapy, also music therapy. So within that, we're trying to align ourselves with best international practice, the UK being one. It took the UK 23 years to get their statutory recognition and to work among their healthcare system. Austria, similar story. Latvia, interestingly, managed to do it in 9 years. So we need to liaise a little bit closer with them, find out how they got it to happen so quickly. So KORU being the registration body who will look after our registration. So we're currently on what's called the aspirants list. Ahead of us are currently psychotherapy and counsellors. They're currently going through their registration process. It's crucial in terms of safeguarding of the clients that we work with. That's across the lifespan, as Lisa mentioned. So among that is also the most vulnerable. people in most need. So we need to ensure that all practitioners, be they arts, music, drama, dance, whichever of the modalities are practicing, that they're practicing to the highest standard, code of ethics, and they answer to IACAT, which is the governing body, and we ensure that they are practicing to the highest standard. And paramount in all of that is the safeguarding, as I mentioned, of all clients that we work with who are often the most vulnerable in society.
Meanwhile, Kate O'Sullivan also explained on an everyday level how the lack of recognition and awareness impacts her work.
So what that means is that we are pretty much on our own, apart from IACAT, which is our association, so it's Irish Association of Creative Arts Therapists. And so we have to really carve our way, you know, through two organizations, two people, which is costly, right? So we have to, you know, there's loads of costs involved, even getting room, you know, facilitating the groups and one-to-ones. We need to buy materials, we need to pay for insurance, we need to pay for electricity. So there's rates, there's lots of costs. And then the funding, you know, is some of the funding is available, but unfortunately, because we are not recognized by state yet, it's very limited. You know, so we, like, I would work with lots of private people that fund this kind of therapy privately. Yeah, and what I would love to see is just more awareness of what we do. It's not just activity. It's much, much, much more than activity. It is a psychotherapy, but it's also it's a very gentle way of dealing with challenges, and it can appeal to many, you know, diverse population. So I suppose more awareness of it would be great, more funding would be amazing, and then, you know, statutory recognition would be great as well.
So what is the way forward? I asked Fabian, what is their call to action?
What do we need? I guess it starts with the dirty F word, funding. That comes in every single conversation. But before that, safeguarding. We have to ensure that the people that we work with are being seen by qualified professionals. Level 9 qualifications. So when somebody comes in the door and says, yeah, I'm an art therapist, you need to see the qualifications. If somebody claims to be a music therapist, ask to see their qualifications. Same right across the modalities. That is why it's crucial that we get statutory recognition. We're already doing the work. As I mentioned earlier, this isn't new. This hasn't sprung up over COVID. It's been around for decades and going right back to the 40s, the 1940s. It's prosperous in so many countries that has statutory recognition and also governed by their different bodies. So IACAT, for instance, we would take our lead from, let's say, BAT, which is the British Association for Art Therapies, BAMT, the British Association for Music Therapy. We're looking at international best practice to ensure that we are governing our members to the same level as international best practice. So what do we need from a governmental level? I guess engagement and quality of engagement, let's say with KORU legislators. But it's also a call out to our own members. Our governing body, IACAT, are essentially, we're volunteers, we are all practicing therapists, art, drama, music therapists. So our time is given voluntarily, but we launched at our AGM what was called our communications document. Within that is all of this crucial information that we're given today. It's so all of our members can deliver this in, let's say, their own communities. But there's consistency in our messaging is what we need across the board. That there's consistency in our community all the way up to stakeholder, funding, legislative, governmental level, and that we engage meaningfully across all of those levels to ensure that people have a very clear picture about who we are, what we do, but also who we are not. We are, Lisa and myself, musicians at heart. That was our first love, but we are therapists. We went through a very rigorous training to get to this place, And it's to make sure that people understand just how intensive that level of training is to get us to where we are and how we can provide service and support in difficult times, be that through trauma, grief, different stages, as Lisa mentioned. It's right across the lifespan, and we can have meaningful engagement and offer meaningful support to everybody.
And now we return to something we heard a bit of at the very beginning of the programme, the power of music therapy. Lisa Kelly, co-founder of Anna Music Therapy, spoke about one of her favourite memories from her time working as a music therapist, and I'll leave it there for Lisa to explain the benefits and the real power behind creative arts therapies.
The area which I mainly work is in dementia care. It's my passion. So I suppose some of my favourite memories. So, for example, I provided music therapy in a community unit for older adults who have mental health difficulties and also a diagnosis of dementia. And I suppose with this work, we're really trying to promote that social interaction piece, because many of the people that I'd be working with have very limited communication and mobility. So one of my favourite memories from this work is when I was in this community unit, and one day a sister had come to visit her brother, and she had travelled 2 hours across the country to see him. But I suppose he has very limited interaction, and I could see the two of them sitting on the couch in the day room, and she was trying to talk to him, but there was no recognition there. So I went over to her and I said, "Hi, my name is Lisa and I'm the music therapist. Can I maybe sing you a song? Do you know any of the music that your brother liked?" So with that, I knelt down in front of them with guitar and I began to sing. And she sang with him and she held his hand and encouraged him to take part. And then one of the care staff came into the day room and she took this man by the hands and she stood him up and she began waltzing around the day room with him. And the sister at the time, she was smiling and she took out her phone and she took a video. She thought it was incredible to see him, I suppose, interacting and come alive even just for a few moments. And with that, she went over to him and was dancing with him. And all of a sudden, there was just this awareness. You could see it in his eyes. And he went over to her and he took her two hands and he smiled at her. And I could see the tears in her eyes, that the music therapy in this scenario had made such an seemingly insignificant moment where they weren't able to connect with each other, that by providing the music, that they were able to create a meaningful connection. And for that lady who had travelled 2 hours to see her brother, and even if it was just for 2 minutes that they had that lovely connection, that's the power of music therapy. It offers people hope.